second section which would then be removed is the Port Health Services phrase from section 25(2)(l) of the Principal Act, and I will then advise the committee subsequent to the rest of the discussion as to how we proceed with that. Then on the final page of the document, or the squares, deals with the independence of the Ombudsman, and this I've included this section because of the issues raised with the independence of the Office of the Health Standards Compliance. My legal view is that I don't have a problem with the independence of the Health Standards Compliance. What the committee might want to consider, and I'll go into the legal opinion for that, what the committee might want to consider is maybe entrenching the independence of the Ombudsman in dealing with complaints. And my issue for consideration for the committee is then by including a role for Parliament in the appointment of the Ombudsperson to further entrench the independence of that. So we don't really tinker so much with the role and have including a board. We just really we entrench the independence of the body already, because in the amendment bill on page number 7, which is section clause 81 capital B, it says there, independence, impartiality, and accountability of the Ombuds. So it is definitely the intention of the executive that they intended for this body or this office or the Ombudsman or the Ombudsperson, to be independent. And given that there are concerns, the Ombudsperson, and I go into this in the legal opinion as well, is that there's definitely aspects of independence in that body, in the Ombudsperson body, because it's receives funds from Parliament. The one consideration, however, is that the Minister does appoint the Ombudsperson, so the committee might want to consider as a policy issue whether we want to further entrench the independence of the Ombudsperson without having to tinker with the board, etc., etc. So that is the last consideration on the page for the squares. I now go to the legal opinion, which is this lengthy document, which I discussed briefly yesterday. And page number 1 is just a brief introduction about how the bill was introduced into Parliament, and it just sets the background as to how the committee dealt with the public hearings and took on board the issues. And then paragraph number 5. Basically, what I'm saying is I divide the opinion into two sections. The first part is a general overview, which assesses independence or the independence issue broadly, and then the second part is I apply the principles that were that the Constitutional Court spoke about in the Glenister matter and the Van Rooyen matter, and apply those principles into the clauses of the Office of Health Standards Compliance in the Amendment Bill. So basically, the first issue here is assessing independence, and I say in paragraph 6 it says no defined or predefined criteria which constitutes independence of a body, of any statutory body. That remains a policy decision. Whether a body is more or less independent must be determined by Parliament and must be determined by the executive as well. Some factors that might be considered in determining whether an entity is adequately independent, and this is according to the Glenister matter, is the context of the body, in this case would be the Office of Health Standards Compliance, the form and structure of that body, which I will then deal with at length in some of the different clauses, and then the public perception, which we have already garnered from the public hearing, where the various bodies, the professional bodies, said that they felt that it was not sufficiently independent. The context, basically, in paragraph 7, as I've already said, that independence is contextual, and it depends on the mandate and purpose of that body, and that the level of independence and impartiality of a specific body will depend on the factors of each case. So it's very difficult to say this is what we look at. It will depend on how each of the one of the bodies are then established in terms of law. In the first certification judgment of the Constitutional Court, it was noted that in the independence of Chapter 9 institutions, it was also contextual according to those bodies. It was the intention of the Constitution to create those bodies as independent as possible and therefore accountable only to Parliament. Then the next page, paragraph 9. The office, or the Legal Services Office, there submit that in considering whether or not the Office of Health Standards complies is adequately independent, the mandate and the context in which it operates must be contemplated by its form and structure, which I then go into at length in with the various clauses. The form and structure now. Just bear in mind that these are just the principles as came out in case law, and then I will then apply them in the second part to the various clauses that establishes the Office of Health Standards Compliance. Then we can have a real understanding how independence really is. Paragraph 11. Independence and impartiality, although closely related, have different meanings. And impartial means without bias and prejudice. So one has to look at when it acts out on its mandate, when any public entity acts its mandate or uses its mandate or exercises its mandate or functions, it needs to, one needs to look at those functions in terms of the empowering provisions of any act and to see how impartial it really is. To be independent means to act free of control, action or judgment, or act autonomously. Now, there's nobody or no public entity or sphere of government in South Africa that is truly independent of one another. The Constitution requires that we all work together. So one has to bear that in mind when one establishes anybody. There's a certain degree, you can only take independence so far. One has to be accountable because that's the principle of cooperative government, that's the principle of separation of powers, that one needs to be accountable. Then the following page, page number 5. Paragraph 13, I then say specific factors that the court looked at and that this committee can use in determining whether a body is whether the Office of Health Standards Compliance and then ergo the ombudsperson, the Office of the Ombudsperson is sufficiently independent, is the removal of the head of the entity, the appointment of the staff of the entity, the security of tenure of the head, the financial security, the conditions of service, the reporting lines, and the mechanisms for funding the entity. We can use those to determine really how independent this body is or if there's a need for this entity to be that independent. Bodies such as the Office of Health Standards Compliance may be established in accordance with divergent forms. So there's with the Treasury guidelines that have been issued with regard to the establishment of public entities, it is the business case of that specific department and the minister of how to establish that body and how, if we want a CEO or we want a board, it'll all come out in the business case. And in this case, the business case obviously then provided for a CEO as opposed to a board and then the Office of the Ombudsman as well. Paragraph 16 then, as I've already mentioned, that in the constitutional scheme, no branch of government is completely independent. So that's just to entrench that idea again. Then finally on the following page, which is page number 6, is in public perception, which we have already, I've mentioned already in the public hearings, it came out that some organizations or professional bodies thought that the Office of Health Standards Compliance is not sufficiently independent enough from the minister. I will then go into the various sections of the bill, which is on page number 7 under part 2, which is the following page. If members can then go to clause number 78 of the amendment bill. So here I go and I look at I use the principles that have to be briefly discussed now in the legal opinion coming from case law, and I've applied it to the various clauses of the amendment bill. paragraph number 26. Clause 78 of the bill, which is headed the objects of the office, sets out the objectives of the Office of Health Standards Compliance, and that is to protect and promote the health and safety of users of health services by monitoring compliance of health by health establishments with norms and standards that have been prescribed by the minister, and by ensuring and considering, investigating, and disposing of complaints relating to non-compliance with prescribed norms and standards. So this office can monitor the compliance of health establishments of the norms and standards, and also investigate and dispose of those complaints. The bill does not mention or define what a complaint is, but it's assumed, and maybe the department can provide a bit more clarity of what a complaint would be, it is assumed that this relates to complaints received from users of various health establishments. The Office of Health Standards Compliance, I'm on paragraph number 27, the Office of the Health Standards Compliance is empowered in terms of Clause 79 to investigate individual complaints, and this power reflects a certain degree of independence from the minister in being able to investigate or initiate their own investigations. So it has, doesn't, the Office of Health and Compliance doesn't have to wait for the minister to go and investigate certain issues or non-compliance of norms and standards by various health establishments. So that might, the committee can look at that as a degree of independence from the minister. Further factors which reflect the independence of the Office of Health Standards Compliance in that it must both inspect and certify health establishments as compliant or in the alternative non-compliant with norms and standards as set by the minister, and monitor indicators of risk as an early warning system relating to serious breaches. So these powers that it has to initiate and to go and check on its own does show that the office does have a degree of independence from the minister, and it is the prerogative of the minister to set those norms and standards. Paragraph 29, this was the issue that I also brought out on the page with the squares, is the prerogative powers of the Office of Health Standards Compliance, which is contained on page number 4, section 79, subsection 2, where it says that the office may issue guidelines, the office may publish any information, the office may collect and request any information relating to prescribed norms and standards, it may liaise with other regulatory authorities, and it may also negotiate cooperative agreements with regulatory authorities. These prerogative powers are quite considerable, and they reflect a certain degree of independence from the minister. Page number 8, then, of the legal opinion, the appointment and removal of the head of the Office of Health Standards Compliance. The Clause 79A then prescribes that the Office of Health Standards Compliance shall be headed by a CEO who is appointed directly by the minister for a renewable period of 5 years. It is also proposed in the amendment bill that the CEO will conclude a performance agreement with the minister, which may be amended from time to time. The CEO may also be dismissed by the minister on various grounds of ill health, gross misconduct, and the inability to perform the functions of the office effectively. That last section, the inability to perform the functions of the office effectively, one has to then look in view in relation to the conclusion of the performance agreement with the minister. So that then means that the minister has a certain degree of control over whether the CEO does his work or doesn't. The fact that the CEO is, this is now paragraph 32, the fact the CEO is appointed and dismissed directly by the minister does not necessarily mean that the Office of the Health Standards Compliance is any less independent. But in our view, it does create the perception that the CEO might have a bias towards the minister if he's hired and fired, and that a performance agreement is signed with the minister, and the minister then has the ability to dismiss that CEO on the grounds of him or he or her not functioning in relation to that performance agreement. But I would like to highlight again that it does not mean that the Office of Health Service Compliance is any less independent or any more independent. This must be viewed on the nature of the facts in each case. The following heading is the accountability of the CEO. Paragraph 33, while the bill proposes that the CEO possesses responsibilities and functions in terms of the PFMA, the CEO is still accountable to the minister as he or she is required to furnish with the minister with information or report in respect of any case matter or subject dealt with from the office and provide the minister with reasons for any decision taken by the CEO, an inspector, or any other employee of the office. This provision might create the impression that the minister might have an undue political influence over decisions made by the CEO, an inspector, or any other employee of the office in relation to inspections or certificates of compliance or non-compliance with norms and standards. While this might create a public view that the office might not be, or the CEO might not be sufficiently independent from the minister, it does not mean that that CEO is any less or any more. Once again, the committee has to decide from a policy perspective altogether with the department whether whether the CEO is sufficiently independent in this regard. And then I make a recommendation that the committee might want to consider for it to be more appropriate to consider appointing a board as opposed to just having a CEO. The nature and the function of the board will remain a policy decision for the committee and the department again. Then the funding of the Office of Health Standards Compliance. It is proposed that the Office of Health Standards Compliance shall be funded by money appropriated by Parliament as well as fees received for services rendered. This clause addresses the issues by various professional bodies which say that they should have fee retention. I find it very strange that they mentioned this given that that the Office of Health Service Compliance is established in terms of the PFMA and has that requisite fee retention power. So I don't know if they didn't read it properly but it's in the bill. So it definitely has the power. So it's funded by money and voted by Parliament. And as well as fees retained for services rendered. Further consideration, and this is not in the opinion, is that some professional bodies or the public might argue that the fact that money is appropriated by Parliament is not sufficient. All bodies, even Chapter 9 institutions, are appropriated money by Parliament, and Chapter 9 institutions even receive a proportion of a budget from a specific department. But that doesn't mean that it's any less independent. It's just how that appropriation is made through the various funds. Like TGE gets it from the Department of Women, Children and Persons with Disabilities. The African Human Rights Commission gets it from the Department of Justice. So that's just how that appropriation is made. It doesn't mean that the department or that office is any less independent. It's something to bring to the attention of the committee as well. Then page number 9, which is paragraph number 34, which is the conclusion then. I then conclude by saying the bill in its current form seeks to create an Office of Health Service Compliance that will monitor the compliance of norms and standards by health establishments. The level of independence by the office, while not expressly stipulated in the bill, might play an important factor in the ability of health establishments to comply with the norms and standards as prescribed by the minister. While the Office of Health Standards Compliance possesses a degree of independence from the minister, the committee might want to seek to entrench that independence by choosing to establish a board that would replace the CEO as head of the Office of Health Standards Compliance, or by providing a role for Parliament in appointing the CEO. I then would like to take the discussion just a little bit further. The Office of the Ombudsperson is situated in the Office of Health Standards Compliance. In my legal view, I don't think the Office of the Health Standards Compliance, there's a problem with its independence. The committee might want to choose then to address issues of independence of this office or the ombudsperson by seeking to, if members will just page to page number 7 of the bill, and the heading above section or clause 81, capital B, says the independence, impartiality, and accountability of the ombudsman. It's clear that if you read the rest of the section, that the intention definitely is to create an ombudsperson that is independent in carrying out its duties. One consideration that the committee might have, and this will address issues of the independence of the rest of the body as well, is creating a role for Parliament in the appointment of that ombudsperson. So that will then curtail having to establish a board as opposed to a CEO, and then we have the ombudsperson who is sufficiently independent by just including that provision for a role of Parliament in appointing that ombudsperson. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Kedir Khoda. Is it Rhoda or Khoda? So thank you very much. Thank you very much. Members, that is the presentation. It's something that he had discussed yesterday. And I suspect it's something that he has discussed with the state law advisor. You didn't discuss with them?
Not
at length with them. Okay, we'll leave it at that. So I'm not sure if there are questions of clarity, members. You just want to be clarified on certain things. Okay, I see Umamunobo. I see Umamusakhalede. Okay, Mamunobo.
Gary, I would like to get some clarity or to find out that if the board were to be in place, would it mean that it's either the CEO or the board?
Mr. Khan?
Chairperson, I would have liked to really understand or hear from both legal groups to be saying that now we have had this, what does the department's legal advisor or lawyer is saying in pertaining to what is being said here. Now, another thing, I just want, Gary, for numbering purposes, the paragraph 34 and the paragraph 34, the paragraph 34 in page 8 and the paragraph 34 in, what does it mean? Okay, I just wanted, I was trying to read them together, but I could feel that they are not. Now, I just wanted, maybe it's a paragraph from another mother.
You can see the members are very alert. But there's something interesting. Your gadget there doesn't put on the light, but when you talk to it, we can hear you. I don't know what's happening. Maybe it's affected by Undadekhana next year. I don't know what's happening. Okay. You know, this is why I was asking whether there has been a discussion between the state law advisor and Rukedi, but it seems as if there's not. There's a suggestion that we need to hear from the state law advisors as to how do they feel about this document. There's something that is, you know, we talk of independence. There's the Office of Health Standards, the compliance, which is headed by the CEO. And I'm not sure whether the question of independence refers to the CEO or the question of independence refers to the ombudsman, Who's doing another job, but he reports to the, according to the bill, he reports to the, but at the same time he can report to the minister directly. I think it would be very important to know which independence. Is it independent or is both? It could be both, right? But you want to know. Maybe before you answer, Kerry, let's ask the state law advisor, Umunabes, to say something. Welcome, Joe.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have read and I follow the parliamentary legal advisor when he was taking members through the bill. The concepts and the definitions and the And the case law, Chairperson, that has been cited, we agree with it. Some of these concepts where the court ventilated them and then gave us a direction as to how we can proceed with that. But as my learned colleague Gary have said, that some of these issues relates to policy decisions that the committee as well as the department must take. It is not an issue. And what is coming clear from Gary is that irrespective of what we choose, it doesn't mean that these institutions are less independent in context, as he has put it. I don't want to speak to the department that I haven't conferred with the DG. I speak to the department. I work for, I represent the department and all of that. But I'll just speak in general terms, DG. You know, when we look at the Constitution, Chairperson, especially Section 85 of the Constitution, it talks about the executive authority of the Republic, and with regard to that, Chairperson, it tells you how the executive. I talk about cabinet or minister. Let me talk about the minister. That's the minister. How he exercises that executive authority, and he tells you that he does that by implementing national legislation, and part of that national legislation is this legislation that we are passing here. That's the executive authority. So that is why even Gary has put it, or everyone will tell you, Chairperson, that independence is relative. Gary said it's conceptual, but it's also relative. It doesn't differ with what Gary said. It's independence relative to whom or to what. As Gary explained, the issue of accountability. You won't find anybody that is totally independent and all of that, including even the arms of state, because there must always be that cooperation between them and accountability and everyone, just to ensure that one doesn't trample or encroach on the powers and functions of the other body. So the minister is the one, Section 85, Chairperson, the minister is the one at the end of the day who's supposed to implement. It's a constitutionally given power of the minister that he should implement these kinds of legislation. So it follows then, the Chairperson, that the minister at the end of the day supposed to have a final or whatever is the executive authority. So that is the case. So we should look maybe at the bill as a concept. Okay, you will have the minister who's an executive head of the department who sets up these norms and standards, because he's the one who will prescribe these two the standards. He's the executive authority of the department. But the minister maybe doesn't want that. Now the policy decision is that, okay, we don't want the department to be at the same time responsible to inspecting or monitoring these norms and standards. Then I need an independent body from the department who will do this inspection and verification and everything from the department, so that you can have that level of impartiality from the office and everything. That is the first part that we should look at. Okay, we're creating this office. We've got the minister, we've got the department, which is headed by the DG, who links with the minister. But you've got now this body, because the minister set up this or prescribed these norms and standards, which is, of course, he will receive all the backup and everything from the department, because, of course, these norms and standards will emanate from the department and everything, you know. So that means, okay, I need to give this now to the independent body who will do the inspection, you know, and everything away from the department, so that the department doesn't play a dual role or anything, you know. So I give it to this body, but this body will still account to me as a minister and everything, but it's independent. It's all independent from the department and all of that. So we should look at that context first, the office, that context, and the even the boards, all the boards of a public entity, we know for ourselves that at the end of the day they account to the ministers, all the boards, including the major public entities. You can take Telkom, Eskom, and all of them. Even if we have a board, they account to the respective ministers, because they what? They fulfill the function that is supposed to fulfill the ministry. That's the minister has taken it and sourced it or whatever to the independent body away from the department so that the department might concentrate on policy issues and all of that. The operation part can be dealt with somewhere else. That is one component that we should look at it. Now, you've got now this ombudsman, this treasurer, this ombudsman within the same office. What is this ombudsman? Now the independence also comes in. Relative to what? Relative to that, as the details explained it around yesterday, relating to the office. When it fulfills its complaints, it acts, because you've got that one that will inspect and everything. At some point in time, there might be complaints. You take that complaint, say, okay, it must be dealt by the separate independent body, which is the ombudsman. As I've said, okay, my friend is saying you might maybe bring in the issue of parliament maybe playing a role as to the appointment and everyone. But if I explained yesterday and together with the others that you still find, I mentioned the Protestants even yesterday, the issue of the military ombudsman, which is appointed, for instance, by the ombudsman is appointed, for instance, by the president. The military ombudsman is appointed by the president. I talked about yesterday about the ombudsman for financial services and all of that. That is appointed sometimes others are appointed by the boards themselves, but still the independency it's not compromised. I can quote, for instance, I had today look at the financial adversary. And intermediary services, where there's the issue of the board and the appointment is done by the board, that is the board, the financial services board. But the structure of that one is totally different from this one, because you've got the inspection, you've got so many structures over the board. The board is it links to the question that have been asked: is it the CEO or the board? You know. Then you've got there the executive director, the financial services board. You've got the executive director who acts to deal with the day-to-day operation issues of the board. Is the board, in other words, the office or whatever, acts through the board, and the board then delegates all that is supposed to do on a day-to-day basis so that the executive director can do that. So those are the issues that the members bring. Parliament, I don't know if the DG will agree, but Parliament can only be limited. It is only limited, as the Constitution has said, it's only to Chapter 9 institution. Could be the minister. I don't want even to suggest the president to come in. Should be the minister or the I don't know, but I if we want to protect the independence, I don't want even to say it should be the board, but still the department or the members can talk. But as I've said it, the executive, we should take it from that perspective, but the executive authority of the republic lies with the executive, with the minister, and the constitution explains subsection 2 of section 5.5 how that executive authority is exercised by implementing national legislation, national policy, or anything, including this National Health Act, national health policy that will come, and anything that will come. That is why it cannot be absolutely independent from the minister. From the department, of course, but not from the minister, because it's a role that the minister is giving to this office to fulfill on his behalf. You know, but it's taking it away from the department, it's giving to a separate structure there, so that the department can concentrate on policy and this can concentrate on operational issues just there on the ground. The issue of the ombudsman we should take it separately from the issue of the office in general. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. I think he's answered some of the questions that were asked, but do you want to come into some of the...
Thank you, Chairperson. I completely agree with my colleague has stated that there's no... I don't know of any body or any department or any branch of government which is completely independent from the other. Independence is relative, and in the case of the Office of Health Standards Compliance and the Ombudsman, in my view, there is independence for those bodies. In order to maybe to allay fears of or the public perception that the Office of the House Standards Compliance and the Ombudsman might not be sufficiently independent, the committee can just or might consider my colleague alluded to the fact that it is the minister who appoints. In Chapter 9, it would be the president who appoints. But you could, the committee could just consider an amendment or an inclusion of a role for Parliament. So Parliament could recommend to the minister a group of persons to be appointed as the ombudsperson, as opposed to just a pure, straightforward appointment by the minister. That might allay the fear, so the person will still be accountable to the minister in that respect, but Parliament will have a role to further entrench that independence. But like as my colleague has also agreed, it is a policy decision. It needs to be taken by the committee. There's no 100% correct way of entrenching independence. One has to look at the body, what the purpose of the body is. But like I said, the committee can consider whether there's a role for Parliament in the appointment of the ombudsperson, which in my legal opinion is the integral part of the Office of House Standards Compliance. And then just to answer Antoine's question relating to the board or CEO, as my colleague has also alluded to, in certain bodies there is the I forgot the word now. It is a board and not a CEO, executive director who heads up the board. So, but it's completely up to the committee how this board, if any, should look like. It's a policy decision and that the committee would take to either to entrench the or further entrench the independence of this body, because it's clear from the bill as it is that there is a desire to make it sufficiently independent. The committee might just want to entrench that by either having a board, which in my opinion might be unnecessary or too cumbersome, in my opinion, it would be better to look at maybe having a role for Parliament in appointing the ombudsperson. That might be a better way of establishing or entrenching the independence of this body.
Thank you, Kev. One actually hopes that, I've seen your hand, one actually hopes that as you are doing this as members of Parliament, we are doing it being driven by the like of our communities, our people, being patriotic about our country. We're not doing certain things because we just want to bring down certain people or certain administration. So we're just doing it purely on the basis that we may want to make sure that our country becomes the best of the countries. I think I need to stress that point because we want that public perception to be what we want it to be so that they can believe us. Dr. Aaron Zaledi is a member of Parliament. And being a member of Parliament, he has been given responsibilities to look after the Department of Health. But the work that he is doing there is not the same work that is done by DG. The DG is an administrator. Zaledi is actually doing the same work that we're doing, oversighting the department as a member of Parliament. I think that's another part that we need to stress, that he is a member of Parliament doing the oversight work, not doing the administration. So if we are worried about certain things, probably it would come in that he's a member of Parliament to start with. It's only that he's given another responsibility to oversight specifically that department, as against where we're oversighting everything ourselves. But DNA is oversighting that particular. He's not doing the same work as the DG, and in fact, it's over. If it was the DG who was going to be employing, it would be a different situation, and I would be very worried if they did. But I'm not making any comment. I want members to comment. Welcome those who came a little bit late. It's a pity that we started before you came. We thought that the time was against us, so we decided to start. I see that Hanare wants to say something. Honorable Hanare.
Chair, the There is a proposal which you made about the removal of Port Health services from section. I hope that the silence does not mean that we are agreeing with this particular amendment to the Principal Act, because we are not dealing with the Principal Act at the moment in terms of this. So we take it that you raised it, but we are not entertaining it at the moment. The other question, the other 2 points which I wanted to raise, Chair, was on page 7 of the bill. I think it's on 81B, 2B, where it says that the ombudsman must perform his or her functions in good faith and without fear, favor, bias, or prejudice. To me, it says more about the independence of the ombudsman. I just want to check with them about whether that actually brings that forth, and whether the ombuds being under the CEO of the Office of Health Standards Compliance. My understanding is that he does not get instructions from the CEO, and the CEO cannot interfere with their findings or recommendations, because here they use more recommendations. I mean, there's no way where they say findings. Whether that is clearer to us. And the last point which I wanted to raise, I don't know whether you raised it yesterday, under page 8 of the bill, 82A, 4A, it says in respect of the that non-compliance imposed upon that person or health established a fine not exceeding 10 million rand. It does not talk about process. You know, it's like if the inspector can make that decision on their own. The problem I have with that is that if the person does not go through the process where you are found to have committed what is said you have committed, then you get fined. The way it is put here, it gives too much power to an inspector to decide this thing. And I think we have got to address that through a process. There must be a process for a person to be found to have not complied. I'm just raising the it's very difficult to talk because we are not going point by point, but I'm just raising that.
Okay, thank you, Reginald. I'm not sure if there are other people who want to have clarities or comments. I see you, Honorable Tate. Just to say, on the Port Health, I had noted that it's something that we need to discuss. Though it's quite important and it's quite urgent that we do it, we need to find time. The silence doesn't mean that we all agree, but it's something that we will have to discuss. I'm not sure, but maybe we can ask the... After passing a bill, in this case, I'm in an update now in adult basic education. After that, you go to regulations. There are regulations which go into detail as to what. I'm not sure whether I'm right that some of those details will come with those regulations, but I'm just throwing it so that Honorable Dudley, I see another second.
Okay, obviously on other issues, we're going to go clause by clause and through the other documents. So just on the issue of independence, talking about whether Parliament has more involvement or the board, just for me it's not quite clear now what the pros and cons are of the board. And you mentioned it could be cumbersome, but I just wonder if you can't, both our legal person and the department, just spell out what you see the negatives, the positives to some degree, but mostly the negatives in terms of what a board would mean in your thinking or to the department, so how it would impact. And then do we have some kind of a draft of which way we would go in setting up that board so that we can have a look at something in front of us?
In fact, we can even go further and say the bill is here, and obviously there are going to be changes. If we put in a board, there are certain things that we'll have to change in the bill, so that we've got to consider. I think all we're trying to do here, we're trying to look into the future as to the challenges that might come. We try and prevent them now. So that's what we're trying to do. But I want to honestly ask you, members, that let's ask these clarity questions or comments so that at 11 we go for tea. after 11, we just go clause by clause. We'll start after 11, we'll go clause by clause. Okay. Honourable Sophia?
You have just covered me. I don't know.
Did you smiling when you say what? Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. The first question, which dealt with the clause 81B subsection 2B, which must perform his or functions in good faith and without fear, favor, bias, or prejudice, that relates to specifically impartiality and not independence. I discussed that in the beginning of the opinion, that we have to distinguish between impartiality and independence, and that those functions that it must perform is our function in good faith, that's impartiality. So it can't, the independence of a body might infect the impartiality of a specific body and how he or she does its functions. So that's the first issue. The second issue is that the CEO doesn't, that the ombudsman doesn't receive instructions from the CEO. That also, it's a policy decision for the committee to make, whether it wants to make the ombudsperson responsible to the CEO or to the minister directly. As I have mentioned before, and my colleague has agreed with me, that is again a policy decision, because it will be the prerogative of the committee to decide whether we want the ombudsperson to report to the CEO, to the minister, but in any event, it is up to the committee to decide how to entrench effectively the independence of any other body, or any of the bodies, the Office of Health Standards Compliance and of the ombudsperson. Then the next question had to deal with the too much power of the inspector. I think I'll give that to the department to decide, because they will obviously know why they have given these powers to the inspector. The issue of the removal of the Port Health Services, that is just the issue that I have brought with discussions with the minister. It is, we're obviously discussing the bill now, but that amendment can be included in this bill. It will just be a decision for the committee to make, but we can discuss that after we have discussed the issues now. That, as you have mentioned, as you correctly said, that is a separate issue. Then Honourable Madadi, the independence issue with in relation to the Parliament, and then the increased role of Parliament in the appointment of the ombudsperson and the board. In my opinion, the board is going to be... the reason why I'm hesitant to adopt or endorse a board option is because one would have to decide whether it's going to be technical or administrative. And I struggle to see how a board is going to be sufficiently technical in nature if there are staff or persons like the inspector or the health officers who are chosen to do those technical things. So the board for me will be heavily administrative in nature, whereas that can just be done by a CEO. So that is the one drawback of having a board. The pro, the upside of having a board, though.
Wait, is that because of availability of people? You say it won't be technical.
It's difficult to have it, not because of the availability of the people, but because of who would do what of a technical nature? Are they going to have oversight over the health officers and the inspectors? And if so, are they going to give technical expertise or technical guidance to the health officers and those inspectors? If you look at the bill as it is now, those health officers and those inspectors are appointed by the CEO in concurrence with the minister. So, and they can be seconded from various departments or from various institutions. And so they already have those, it's envisaged in the bill that they already have those technical expertise. So I struggle to see how the board would give that technical guidance, not because of a lack of the skills, but just because it is going to be heavily cumbersome to have all those persons provide technical guidance. In my view, it's going to be, it's a very top-heavy system. The upside of having a board, though, is that there's more than one person who would then not make decisions, but it will be a collective agreement, so there will be more independence. In relation to Parliament having a greater decision, a greater role, I think this will be an easier way in which to deal with the matter of independence, because it'll just mean that the committee, there will probably be an ad hoc committee, or it will be the portfolio committee on health, which would then have inputs into which person is appointed. So that will increase or entrench more the view that that the body and the ombudsperson is then independent, and as well as the Office of, because my idea is that the Office of Health Standards Compliance, because it is directly accountable to the minister, and it has the role of acting as a check and balance for the norms and standards, that it's not really the Office of Health Standards Compliance, but more the ombudsperson, because the ombudsperson is the one who's going to deal with systematic issues in the provision of healthcare services. And that is where we really want the independence to be, because they look at systemic issues, how health care services are provided to the people of South Africa. So that's where the real independence, we have to protect that, because they have a greater power to investigate and check, and that's where we would want the independence to be. So that's my suggestion, that we have a greater independence by having a role for Parliament.
There's a question that Gary has referred to the department about the powers of the inspectors. I'm not sure whether you just want to make a comment on that, did you?
Thank you, Chair. I just want to raise a few points, and perhaps this can serve as a guidance. We do have examples of technical boards. The first is the Council for Medical Schemes. It's not administrative. It's technical. Equally, we do have a MRC board. It's also a technical board. If you look at the standards that are proposed, then obviously we have to establish a process on how these standards for health establishments are determined. It's a technical process. But you need some governance also, because you don't want power to reside in an administration led by a CEO. I think this is a safeguard that has been proposed with the board. We didn't propose a board, but when we read the suggestions by other stakeholders about a board, we thought it was sound, and we didn't have objections to that. But I was just thinking that perhaps not being a lawyer, I describe myself as a pseudo lawyer. A pseudo lawyer.
No,
Yes, I studied law, Chair. That's a distinction I make. I studied law, but I'm not a lawyer. There's a difference. I just wanted to request that we also have to be cautious. And I said this, I'll repeat it again, that perhaps what we normally, and I'd like to refer to these technical, particularly technical advisory bodies or technical structures. When you talk about independence, I think the impression should not be created that when you talk about independence, it's independence from executive authority, it's independence from all forms of pressure, whether it be public pressure, commercial pressure, or influence, political and otherwise. So we must always guard against any form of pressure. But look at what safeguards are in place to ensure that the public is not exposed to harm. And I've raised this issue of harm because from the complaint management system that we've established, the preliminary work that we've done, it's quite clear that there are certain things that happen in our institutions. We need to hold people accountable. And if the establishment of this office is going to help us, it's going to be a vehicle by which we can achieve that, the question is, where should the emphasis be? The emphasis is how we make this office of self-standard compliance to function in such a way that the public can be protected and the public can get the services that they expect to get when they get to our facilities. And that is the principle, Chair, and perhaps that's where I would like to put emphasis. And having said that, Chair, I also would like to say that the laws are quite clear in our country about the roles of executive authority and the administration and the roles of the DG and so on, and those are well established. But we do have relationships with other established entities that are already operational, where we can take our leave from the Council for Medical Schemes, the Medical Research Council, and a whole lot of others, and other statutory bodies. I'm raising that because we probably would have to understand from that perspective that independence, I think we all understand it from what I've explained, that we've looked at it generally. We've also looked at the difference between a technical process and an administrative process that we think we need to follow. But in particular, some area that I think may not necessarily be written in law is about clinical governance, for instance. You wouldn't want to write clinical governance into law because it's an evolving time. But it's a critical area because you want to ensure that in your institution, the manner in which your clinicians conduct themselves, the manner in which they practice their trade, it can be governed. It's not only adequate to rely on a statutory body, because your statutory bodies, like your Health Professions Council, they wait for a problem and then only react thereafter. They wait for negligence and then react thereafter. Now, what normally you do with a body like your Office of Health Standard Compliance, you establish what you call clinical governance structures, where you say these are the protocols that must be followed. And when they go to a facility, they will check whether, do you have the protocols, are they followed? So those are the kind of things that we want to put in place. And I just thought I should give those kind of examples so that, yeah.
Thanks, DG. That is the explanation for the clarity that we wanted. So I think probably it's time for us to go for tea. But before we go for tea, we congratulate you with your paralegal status, DG. I think you do it well. At least you're up there. I'm hoping that as we are formulating these laws, what drives us are the people of South Africa, all of us. And we are patriotic. The first thing that comes to our minds is our country before anything. Because these are some of the things that when they have been enacted, they make us fight. Sometimes when you look at the fights that we go to, you actually notice that the fight is to such an extent that you even want to destroy what you should not destroy. I think we've seen that. We've seen that in the media. And you actually say, we're actually killing the country. It happens in political organizations where the fight becomes so difficult that it's at a level where you can see that people want to kill the organization that they've joined deliberately, without being forced by anybody, they just join it. But when they start fighting, it's as if, whereas we should be having levels where we can fight, but not to kill. I mean, it should be like the parasites, they're very clever. That's what I used to say about my home girl, HIV and AIDS. That HIV and AIDS, HIV virus, is a parasite. It will kill a few, but it will never kill everybody. Because if it kills everybody, it will die itself. So it will make sure that it kills some, but there's still some that remain so that it can survive. So sometimes when we fight to an extent of even killing the thing that helps us to survive. So I'm hoping that we're making this law being driven by the fact that we want South Africa to be better. And if South Africa is better, even the other countries are going to be better, the whole world is going to be better, but we start with our own country. It doesn't mean that we are not going to have differences. And it doesn't mean that there are not going to be problems even with this later on. But as long as those differences are going to come, but we always try and preserve our country. Let's go for tea, and then when we come back from tea, we'll look at this clause by clause. I was asking viewers, who's going to be reading this clause by clause? Is it me, or should I ask somebody to read it for me? But we'll see. Okay, let's go for tea, and then we'll come back.
That's why the Baga would say that.
The question on the board is very on the mark. This should be government.
Ah, Sunday.
Thank you. Thank you. It is.
Sometimes I get worried, Kelly, that if you would put the sun for us, you would put it very far and it would be very cold because they are too tall. So we need somebody who's short to put the sun and put it closer so that we... Members, Sekhwale, it's like when somebody says, I was doing Form 5 at a certain stage. That person is telling you his or her age. Because there was a time of Form 5, there was a time of Standard 10, there was a time of Grade 12. So if she says Form 5, you know exactly when that person was born. Members, this is your turn now. This is what we're getting into, an area which you are employed for. The salaries that you are getting are because of doing this. Order, members, order. Order, members. So this is your turn now to look at this bin and decide whether the things that are appearing here is what our communities want. And we're going to do it clause by clause. It's basically going to be the members. I don't expect anybody from this side to say anything. It's only the members that are going to be saying, is this right? And we might use it with what we have been given by, not the paralegal, but by the legal, but the main legal. So we might actually look at it that way. But I'm sure there are some things that we might, when we get confused, ask the department and ask the legal people to help us. So I'm going to be reading this as I'm told that I'm supposed to do it, and we'll go clause by clause and see whether there's something that needs to be changed. It's, can I go on to that? But before I go on to that, I want to mention that we are going to go, at 2 o'clock, we're going to go back to Parliament because the President is presenting his budget. So we're all supposed to be there. But as soon as the President has finished his part, we leave Parliament and start all over again at M46 is at Max Building. And we'll be sitting there until very late today. But I think dinner is organized. So everybody will have dinner here. You don't have to go and pay somewhere else. So I'm hoping that if we move out of Parliament, all of us at 3 o'clock, we'll be able to start at 3:15. So at 3:15, we're expecting that everybody will be seated at M45 so that we continue with this. Can I start reading this bill? It says the bill to amend the National Health Act 2003 as to provide for establishment of the Office of Health Standard Compliance and for that purpose to insert, substitute, or delete certain definitions, to delete, revise, and insert certain provisions and to provide for matters connected therewith. This is a straightforward sentence, but do you think this sentence has been well prepared and it points to what we would like? Members, I'm going to be looking at your hands time and again.
Dagahana. I understand that you are dealing, we are going through clause by clause. But I thought we should agree on principle first about the issue of the board, as discussed here, which I think I heard the DG, they are not really opposed to the establishment of the board. And if we agree in principle on the board, I think under definition we should have some definition of what that board will mean, and then at a later stage we'll have to include it. When it comes to the accountability of the office.
Okay, Darekhana. I sense Darekhana. I see Ndadele Khetso, your hand is up.
Yes, Chair. I'm sure the department also would, I'm not sure, I'm making a proposal here that because they need to actually the approach is that the department must take the document instead of you as a chair. No. Don't shake your head when I talk. You have chance. Just shake your heart. Then it would, if you say members, you don't expect them to say anything when they are here or they are legal opinion and whatever, it's going to be difficult for us. For me in particular, whether we are doing the correct thing. So, they must also participate. That is how I feel myself, because we are not that technical or expert as they are, although we are going to make changes. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Lekgetho. I would suggest that we dispose of this suggestion by Ntate Kganang, because I take it that if we want to include a board which was not there here, it's going to affect a lot of paragraphs or sentences here. So before we go on to other things, let's concentrate on that. Dadel Kheto, I think it's very good that we use our wishes. But unfortunately, when we deal with law, it's not about our wishes. It's about the process, how we do it. And the process is such that we are the people that do oversight, and this is the ultimate end in South Africa. So the department has done their part. It is not them now. The only thing that we can do from them is just to ask certain things. Otherwise, everything that is supposed to be coming from us. And I take it this institution that we're representing here is the ultimate institution in South Africa that has got to make these decisions. Whether we have the knowledge or we don't have the knowledge, the onus is on us to make sure that this is done. Okay, Honorable.
Are you on that point of...
I'm making a proposal that we flag then that sentence, that clause, for when we've gone through the bill, so that if there are any changes, we can come back to it, so that we don't actually say yes or no to that sentence, because we don't know if we want to. So we need to flag it, and we need to come back to it once we've discussed everything else. My proposal.
Okay. There's a proposal that we flag that, and there's something that I mentioned that if we talk about the board, there's a lot of sentences that might change. So whether people feel that we must start with it or we must finish or must bring it sometime during the course, I don't know. But I want to hear from you. There's a proposal that we leave it until then. And Honorable Dr.
Chairperson, I think the way Mr. Khanar or Honorable Khanara is saying it is that I also share the same sentiment, because if we are going to flag, when coming back, it might be another time or very difficult. So when we know that we have agreed on how or whether we agree about the board, then the person who captures will know that now it's no longer this, it's that. Now it's long under our clauses that we are going to go through.
Thank you, ma'am. Honorable Robinson Ka.
Thank you, Chair. I also want to support that view, that we decide now whether we're going to accept it or not, and I would, you know, very much like that, because then we can make the changes immediately as we're going through, instead of having to revise the whole process again. So it needs to be relevant as we go. Thank you.
Honorable Dudley, can I make a ruling that it seems as if... Oh, you want to say something before I make a ruling?
But I don't think that we're saying a different thing. If we're going to deal with it now, that's great. The section on the board, then that's fine, because then we can stop. But if we're not, then we can't make a decision on that clause right now. So I don't think I don't have a problem with what they're doing. It's just if we're not doing that, then we have to flag it.
I don't want to be confused totally. Master, do you want to say something?
I don't think he actually knows.
The whip wants to say something. Okay.
Chair, I was going to say there seems to be, we're all talking about the board, but maybe it's important that the parliamentary legal guru gives us a definition of the board,
yes,
so that it falls under definition.
Let's agree that we're going to start, everybody agrees that we're going to start with the board. But the definition will allow the legal people to help us. Okay, can you come on out?
Yeah, I was going to say exactly the same thing, Chair. You know, with that sentence that we read in the beginning, after the bill, the long title, together with the definition, that will be clause one. Clause one are going to be influenced by whatever you decide in the body of the bill. We will come back to it and correct it. For instance, if you agree on the board, then we will have to come back. It's what we call a consequential changes that we will do when we amended the body of the bill. Even the definition of the board, because we can't say, for instance, the definition of the board will say board means a board established in terms of this and this particular section. But because now we haven't decided which section will form part of the board if you have decided. Then after you've decided and we have located the section where you're going to appoint, the board is going to be appointed in terms of it. Then we come back to the definition and say the board means a board established in terms of that section because you have already decided. So the definition and the law title is not necessary for the chairperson to deal with now. But those will be consequential changes that will effect after the chairperson and the committee have decided on the main issues of the or substantive issues of the bill or substantive clauses of the bill.
Members, I think we need to agree whether do we put in the board or do we say we don't need a board in this bill. Maybe let's remind each other that there's a very big question on independency of the structure that is going to be set up. And now when you're talking of the board, we've been given that the board could be technical, the board could be administrative. I think let's just remember those things. Do we need a board or don't we need a board? I saw Honorable Sakhale Desai, I saw Ndadale Khedlo. Okay, come, Honorable.
Chairperson, my take was, maybe I was going to support what Honorable Gatley was saying, to be saying that at this juncture, we wouldn't be saying that, do we need a board or do we...
Can I call you to order?
Yeah.
We have agreed that we're going to discuss it now. So let's not go back to what Honorable Dudley was saying. Let's just go forward and say, do we need a board or don't we need it?
Okay. There was another. Chair, definitely that technical board is needed to entrench the independence of this body. To deal also with perceptions that arises. I would agree with Honorable Dudley that we must flag that thing and make consequential changes as we move.
I don't want us to digress. We have agreed, all of us, that we said, were there any other people that were against? And it was Honorable Dudley. And the people that agreed, most of the people agreed that we continue with it. But it's just a question of saying, do we need a board or don't we need a board? Where we put it or where the legal people put it is going to be their baby. But do we need it at this time and moment? That's all we want. Honorable Dudley.
Okay, I'll take my proposal off the table. We do need a board. We need a technical board. And we just need to see what the drafting of that would entail.
Yes, Chair, I just want to substantiate that point of view as well. And if we look at page 4 of the document we were given yesterday, we see there that HASA recommends a Board of Health Standards to be established. And I think if we can include the bodies that are already there with some sort of an oversight, if you think of HASA and SANAS and CoHASA,
those are the people we can draw in because they're already involved there, and that might be useful.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Robinson. I don't want us to digress. I want us to be forecast. And the forecast is about the board. I think if you read what Hassa was saying, they're talking about another board about the norms and standards, which is something out of the... We're just talking about the board that is going to be overseeing, whether it's technical or administrative. So I've had two suggestions that we accept the board must be there, but it must be a technical board. That's what people are saying. I see Gary wanted to...
Jefferson, if I could just put, make a proposal for the members, what I will do is during when the members go to the House, I'll draft a section that will set out what the board should look like, and when the members come back from the House and we can proceed again at, after three, I can then present what the board, a proposal for the board, and the members can then decide, and then once they have taken a decision, all the consequential changes will be made by the drafting team, which will include myself and Wilma BC, and then we can proceed.
Thank you very much.
Members, can we step off this point and go to the next? Okay, thank you. Then it goes, be it enacted by the Parliament of the Republic of South Africa as follows. Amendment of Section 1 of Act 61 of 2003. Number 1, Section 1 of the National Health Act 2003, herein referred to as the Principal Act, is hereby amended by the insertion after the definition of certificate of need of the following definition. This is legal jargon. Chief executive officer means the person appointed as a chief executive officer in terms of section 79A in brackets 1. I'll stop there and ask for comments. Let me take off my coat. I'm becoming warm now. Oh, if the heater is on, can we turn it down? Can we turn it down? Okay, members, I'm looking at your hands. Oh,
that.
You know, the unfortunate one is that there was a match. There was a match yesterday, but unfortunately they were not. They didn't go according to what you wanted them to. Okay. Members, I'm looking at your hands after having read this sentence. Okay, Ndarekana.
I think generally there is not much we can talk about as far as definitions are concerned. We should just accept the definitions as they are, and then we proceed straight to Chapter 10.
Okay. Members, are we agreeing that... we go to Chapter 10.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Chapter 10, Office of Health Standards Compliance, Inspection and Environmental Health Investigations, Health Officers and Inspectors, Complaints and Appeal Procedures. Now, Establishment of Office of Health Standards Compliance. 77... 1. The Office of Standards of Compliance is hereby established as a juristic person. Number 2. The office is funded by a money appropriated by Parliament, and B. Fees received for service rendered. I'll stop there and see if there are any.
I just want the legal people to assist me, because when people were making presentations, they were talking more about it being Section 3 of the Public Finance Act. What is the difference between what the presentations were proposing and what the 3 says?
Okay, it's going to come. Can you comment on this? We're going to come back to that.
We agree.
Okay, we agree.
Mm.
Let's go to 3. 3, the office is subject to the Public Finance Management Act 1999, Act number 1 of 1999.
Agree.
Okay. Can you come with a question again? Oh, I'm sure they heard it, so let them explain. Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. The proposals made by that came from the public submissions during the public hearings were the same as the bill proposals. If the member can just look at it will come when the chairperson eventually gets to that portion of the bill. On page 13, it says exactly what the public submissions wanted, in that it is in part A of Schedule 3 of the Public Finance Management Act. That is what the public hearings or the submissions wanted. So it is included in the act. And it's one of the oversights that the submissions made. I don't think they probably read the bill in its entirety.
Because I mean, most of them were saying the office should be established as a juristic person, but must be a Schedule 3 PFMA entity. So I just wanted to say, if the bill says so, why would the people making presentation, submission, submit what the bill says? You know, I was confused.
Okay,
thanks, Madam.
Reading this from the first paragraph, there's a submission by the Health Environmental Institute. They wanted some changes in that heading. I'm not sure whether we're going to entertain those in the heading. There's something that they say, but if you read it, it seems as if they've just changed one word and put it the other way and the other one, but it's still the same. I'm not sure whether you have read it. Okay, I'll think about what it's here. They say I'm reading from the document of the South African Institute of Environmental Health. It says the South African Institute of Environmental Health. No, I don't want to go to that. Where is this part? There's a part where they talk. Oh, okay. It's in page 2. There's a part which has got a bulletproof, which says page 3, it says chapter 10, the heading should include environmental health investigations and inspections. Have you read that part? They say the heading of chapter 10 should read, I want to know what we have about that, should read environmental health investigation and inspections.
Does that not take us off on a rabbit trail? Is that not another department and another? So, to me, I think that's something that needs to be addressed perhaps through another bill.
Okay. Can we move on then? Member, I'm going to the objects of office. The objects of the office are to protect and promote the health.
If you look at page 9 of the bill, where it says environmental health investigation, I'm sorry, the title, just the title there. I think what influenced them to propose that the title here should include that is because the bill talks about environmental health investigations also there, so they wanted that to be included in the title. I'm not saying anything. I'm just highlighting that it might be the reason why they wanted that to be included on top. That's a decision we must make. I'm not going to contribute towards making the decision.
Come again, Darahana. Let's get to this.
What I'm saying is that the submission proposes that as far as the title is concerned, Office of the Health Standard Compliance Inspection and Environmental Health Investigations, Health Officer, I don't understand. Because basically there is a talk about environmental health investigations. I think what they wanted is to just include. How many inspections are there? Okay, I'm withdrawing.
Okay. Okay, can we go on? The objects of the office, 78, the objects of the office are to protect and promote the health and safety of users of health service by A, monitoring compliance by health establishment with norms and standards prescribed by the minister in relation to the national health systems, and B, ensuring consideration, investigation, and disposal of complaints relating to non-compliance with prescribed norms and standards in a procedural, fair, economical, and expeditious manner.
Chairperson, for me, I think if we go as far as prescribed norms and standards, full stop.
Order, member.
Come again, member.
I am saying, if we go as far as prescribed norms and standards, full stop, in a procedurally fair and whatever and whatever, I would omit it unless everybody badly wants to have it in.
Yeah, at B, yeah.
I'm at B.
Let me read it again. Ensuring consideration, investigation, and disposal of complaints relating to non-compliance with prescribed norms and standards. That's where you want the full stop.
Yes.
And we leave the other party deleted. Or we still have it, but it's that we start a new sentence. Or we want that to delete
it. I would really delete it.
Okay. Sense. Honourable Daddy, you can switch off.
Okay, my comment was different there, but I'll comment on that just in passing. Normally I would agree that we delete it, but looking at some of the judgments lately, it looks like we need to put in everything that we're thinking into the bill, otherwise it can be misread in the court. But my point was that complaints, it was suggested earlier that complaints haven't been defined, and it might be necessary to define complaints.
Thanks, Honourable Dudley. I suspect the reason why they put this, but fairness has to come somewhere to show objectivity to the whole thing, that whatever that is going to be done is going to be objective. It's not going to be subjective to certain conditions. But whether we put it as another sentence or we delete it, I still want to know from you. Honourable Dati, we've got your suggestion. Ndadekhane?
Look, I'll personally agree, because if the minister is going to have some sort of a performance agreement with the CEO, the CEO must know that the minister will check whether things they have done is procedural, and whether they were economic, and whether the performance was expeditious. I think it enables the minister to be able to put this level of performance in the performance agreement. I think it just gives the minister a leeway. That would be my view, that it should be left as is for that purpose.
Okay, the question that you must come and answer to is whether do we put it as another sentence or do we leave it as it is?
Leave it. It looks more nice.
Chairperson, maybe I need an explanation whereby we are saying economical, and if it is not economical, what does that mean? That's what I want to know, so that when we deal with it, because it will give people a leeway to be saying that maybe we didn't do it. It was not economical, and it is included. I don't know.
Okay, thanks. I've heard people saying somebody is economical with the truth, trying to say that you are a liar. I've heard that. But I suspect here what they're saying, that when you do that, you try and look at the cheapest way to do it. I think that's what they mean. Okay, I'm not sure, but I stand corrected. Honourable.
Would the words cost effective not seem more, but not be closer to what we're trying to say? Economical does sound like we want to go to the bargain rail, whereas cost effective means we want the job to be done the best for the least.
Okay. Thank you, Honourable Dati. You want to answer that, Ken?
Thank you, Chairperson. I can take guidance from my learned colleague over there as well. He's from the state law advisor, so he's very cool when it comes to the drafting part. But for me, economical, the way the courts have interpreted economical, it's not just cost of time. So it's a host of factors that the courts take into consideration when they look at economical. So if the office, I'm sure the office wouldn't want to be bogged down with, I wouldn't say smaller complaints for a longer period of time. So they look at the time factor, they look at the cost factor as well. These are the sort of things that the courts look at. I'm sure my colleague would be able to provide more guidance on that as well. But that's how the courts have interpreted economical. And it is cost effective, again, on the other hand, is just looking at the financial implications. And not at the time that each of the inspectors or the health, the inspectors would then dedicate to each one of the complaints or the investigations. So it's just not just cost, it's time as well, or resources in general, human resources.
So thank you. There's the explanation. Okay, none of that.
I don't really accept that explanation, thank you, but it's because cost. Actually, people's time is costly. So when we talk as members of parliament about something being cost-effective, we clearly are factoring in people's time because that is costing. So I don't see it actually, it doesn't satisfy me on that.
Yes, I saw you. Dr. Khan. Oh, okay, I've seen you, Dr. Khan.
I don't want to touch a hand and then end up at Gender Commission. My bee is here. My understanding is that as a layman, I'm not a lawyer, but in most cases when people talk about costs, what comes to my mind is money, basically, honestly. Other intelligent people will say cost effective involves money, it involves time, it involves the turnaround and all that. But we have got to put it in such a way that it is understandable. It is all encompassing, let me put it that way, rather than to be limited in our explanation.
If I get you in that, I think economical is more broader than cost. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I think the legal expert guru has made it very easy. So the word economical is more relevant than any other. So secondly, I'm sure this document has been thoroughly researched by the legal gurus. We should not be bogged down here by trying to change everything that is in the book. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. I think we'll have to make a ruling because there are two opposing statements. The other statement was saying that if we could delete it, but it seems as if we all agree that it mustn't be deleted. Mm. But should we make it a separate sentence or is it right as is?
Thank you, Chair. I would suggest that we leave as it is. I don't see any. Let's leave it as it is, Chair.
Chair, listening to the argument, I can see that we are battling to have the definition for the understanding. Like when I'm seeing if a thing, what does it say to us when you view
this complaint is not economical. And what does that mean? If I come in, I'm coming to complain, then somebody feels that it's not economical. That's my we can leave it as long as it's been understood and as long as it cannot be a loophole in future.
Okay. Thanks. Are there any other people that want to comment after Mr. Khaled has said? Because I think this is very important, the point that you're bringing, that we're representing people here. So, and we're trying to understand it the way that they will understand it. Do we understand it the way that it's supposed to be understood, as the legal people were telling us?
Thank you, Chairperson. If I could just give one of the rules of interpretations of the court, look at the ordinary dictionary meaning of the word when it applies it to the various parts of the sections. And if one looks at the dictionary meaning of economical, it's an adjective, and it says giving good value or service in relation to the amount of money, time, or effort spent. So it's careful not to waste money or resources or using no more of something than is necessary. So it's not just looking at the financial aspect, but looking at time and effort spent on each one of the complaints or investigations.
Thank you, Kerry. I think the most important two people that I've learned are concerned with making a law is one is our communities, the way they're going to perceive and understand it. And on the other side is the courts and the legal people, how they interpret whatever that is there. I think let me make a ruling. Let's just leave it as is and continue and go to the next one. Okay. Then the next one is the functions of the office.
Did we deal with the flipping complaints into definitions or not?
Can you come again?
Sorry, the word complaint. It was suggested that it hasn't been defined and that might be an issue.
You want us to define it now?
Well, or at least push it somewhere so that we can know when we're going to deal with it.
Okay. I want your suggestion. What do you
suggest? Okay. I thought we could leave it to the legal people to, so that they can include it as part of the definition.
That will be good.
Okay. Of the office. The office, that is 79.1. The office must A, advise the minister on matters relating to determination of norms and standards to be prescribed for the national health system and the review of such norms and standards. I'm not going to go to B. Let's just look at that one. Is that okay? Okay. B, inspect and certify health establishment as complaint or as compliant or non-compliant with prescribed norms and standards, or where appropriate and necessary, withdraw such certification. How is that? Agreed on that? Okay. Let's go to C, investigate compliance relating to the national health system.
It's complaint.
No, you've hit it on the nail. I was asking myself as I'm reading this thing and we worried about definition, that most of us are not English speaking. And sometimes this, you might interpret it differently when you interpret in your mother tongue. It might be slightly different. But you know, you've hit it on the nail. One time I went for an exam. It was one of the college exams, the senior exams in medicine, when I wanted to be a specialist. And then I was ready to qualify as a specialist. Now, one of my professors asked me a lot of questions, and I was answering them. But before I answered a question, it used to take me a longer time. And then he asked me, he said, but Golkwana, you're good. I think you're going to make it in this senior exam. But what worries me is how you think. Do you think in Xhosa and translate to English, or do you think in English and answer in English? I said the former is right. I think in Xhosa and translate to English. That's why I'm taking longer. And he said, if you do that, they're going to think that you don't know. So you must try and think in English and answer in English. It will be shorter. But it was so difficult for me, I tell you. Okay, let's go on. Okay, let's go to D. D is monitor indicators of risk as an early warning system relating to serious breaches of norms and standards, and report any breaches to the minister without delay.
Agreed.
Okay. E, identify areas and make recommendations for intervention by a national or provincial department of health or health department of a municipality where it's necessary to ensure compliance with the prescribed norms and standards. Okay. F, recommend quality assurance and management systems for the national health system to the minister for approval. Member? Okay. Keep records of all its activities and, let me go to H, advise the minister on any matter referred to it by the minister. Do you understand that? Okay. Okay. Okay, let's go to the office may issue guidelines for the benefit of health establishment on the implementation of the prescribed norms and standards. Okay, B, publish any information relating to the prescribed norms and standards through the media. Okay?
Sir?
Which one are you in?
The A.
Okay.
But it's in relation to the May, because I'm having a problem around May issue guidelines for the benefit of health establishment on the implementation of prescribed norms and standards. If they can't issue guidelines, where will the people find the guidelines? Because when you are saying it may or it may not. Now, my main object, my main problem is around issuing of guidelines. For me to, for you to say that I don't perform according to norms and standards, it means that you should have given me some guidelines so that they must help me. Now, if you may or may not, what does that mean?
Thanks, Mr. Khaled. In fact, that may refers to all those subsections.
Now,
okay.
Now, I'm taking the A in particular because we are dealing with A. To me, if I have to do something and you are my supervisor and you want my things to be according. What?
No, order. Yes, we are protected. We are protected. Continue.
Why should you say may or may not? It may be a standalone without others. And I don't know why others are lazy. Maybe they could be bringing up a better understanding because they really irritate me.
No, you are protected. Don't worry about the laughing because it might be something else. But don't worry about them. Your point is very important, and we're going to deal with it. Okay, I see that. I saw your hand there. Okay,
Dadelechet. Thanks. Let me take you just a little back. This advise the minister on any matter referred to it by the minister. That duplication on one sentence, I'm not clear on that. Can you just explain that? Because it talks to on the same person. Thanks, Chair. I hope.
The other hand is taking us back to something that we had agreed. But okay, because for. Okay. Honorable, if you want to respond, okay.
To me,
it looks like the minister will have a matter that will refer to the office to look into. And the office, by the same token, will report on that matter back to the minister. It was referred by the minister. They've dealt with whatever they had to deal with, and then they report back to the minister. That's how I interpret it.
That last part, that is, refers to the functions of the office, which says the office must, and it says the office must advise the minister on any matter referred to it by the minister. Do you get it now? Okay. Okay. Then Honorable Sakhale decides the question. Okay.
My understanding is that you can't just take A from the whole two. You have got to read all of it. Particularly because it gives room for, because there will be other authorities which might be regulating certain things. And therefore, let me say that the laboratory services might have regulations about how to run laboratory services. So they will not, if you say must, then that means they will have to, the office will have to have its own regulations when they can use the regulations of another authority to be able to do the job. That's why they say may. So it gives them room where there is no other authority for them to establish those particular. That's my understanding.
Thanks very much, Dr. Khanat. In fact, I think this came up long before as we were discussing. And I think there's something that was said that making this law, we should look at the other laws that are already there. I mean, a good example that was made by DG yesterday is that you might find that HPCSA, I'm not saying that it was by law, but it says something, and there are regulations already there. Now, you might not have to repeat that because it's an individual. But I'm trying to agree with you, Dr. Khanat, but I'm just sharing. I want to hear from the other people. I was just mentioning something that has happened. So to try and address, Dr. Khanat is trying to address your concerns, Mr. Khan. How do you feel about what he's saying?
Chairperson, after he has explained, I do understand what you say. But, I don't know, but it's fine.
No, say it to me.
Thank you, Chair. I was thinking that maybe the legal people can just give an advice of that between May and Must. Which one should we follow? What are the implications between the two?
I told you that this another was paralegal. Like, good to do. Okay, let's go to the list. Okay, Gary.
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of may versus must, may, it gives the Office of Health Standards Compliance the discretion on whether to issue this guidance or not, whereas must is peremptory, which instructs the office, you have to issue guidelines. And in the issue here, in terms of issuing guidelines for the benefit of health establishments on the implementation of prescribed norms and standards, I think these are the section of first, the little booklet guides, which are handed out to maybe the users of health establishments, and in this case it will be to the health establishments itself on what can you do to improve the service, what can you do to abide and implement the prescribed norms and standards, so that it's not, these norms and standards are not in a vacuum and these health establishments are not sure how to implement and meet those sort of minimum levels of service.
Thank you, Kerry.
Yes. Or should I leave it? Should I leave it? I represent the DG, so I must speak through the DG. So if the DG is satisfied that it's all of that, then I should leave it. But if the DG says, okay, I must come, you know, it's coming, because I speak through the DG, I represent the DG, the department, be that as it may. As Gerex explained it, it's a must. When we know when it's a must, you have to do it. You don't have a choice. It's peremptory. We say it's peremptory. It's mandatory. Like it or not, you must do it. Then maybe you've got a level of discretion where you can do it, you cannot do it. But I want to take this discussion further, members. I've taken it further even in the workshop that we had at Townhouse, especially with that one that we have raised. For instance, may issue guidelines for the benefit of health establishment. The operative word here is on the implementation of prescribed norms and standards. Just keep that in mind. On the implementation of norms and standards. So let's now take it further. The office has not issued. It's a must there now. Let us take hypothetically. We have must there and two. We've got must now there. We don't have may. And then the office have not issued norms and standards. You have not issued guidelines on the implementation of prescribed norms and standards. Then the health establishment, when the health inspector goes there, it will say, but we are still waiting for the office to issue guidelines. So you can't find us to be lax or to be not in compliance with norms and standards because the office has not issued the guidelines on the implementation of norms and standards. So you can't find us guilty. You can't find us to be non-compliant because we are still waiting for the guidelines on the implementation of those norms and standards. But if it's May, if it remains May, then even if the office have not issued those guidelines and everything, but they're still required to ensure that they comply with the norms and standards. So the difference of that, because if it's a must, then they will have the escape route, you know, of not doing what they are supposed to do. In other words, the health establishment. They will have the escape route, they will have an excuse and all of that. But if it's still May, then even if, because it depends on the discretion of the office to assist them actually with the implementation of those. But it doesn't mean if the office have not issued those norms and standards, then they will remain and say, we cannot comply with these norms and standards because the office have not implemented this and this and this. You know, so that is where the difference. I don't know if I've put it clear, because they will always have an excuse if we have must, because the department is, in other words, it's presupposed before I can act, or before they can comply. They will say it presupposes the office to issue those norms and standards before I can do anything or I can comply with the norms and standards, but the office can choose to do it on its own discretion so that it can assist them as how to comply. But it doesn't preclude them from complying with those norms and standards. That's a discussion that I always want to take it further when it requires, when we explain the must and the may in legislation.
So thank you, Munabusi. In fact, it's so interesting that you could not talk. You had to consult DG. And we have been talking about dependency. That is accepted. You must not be independent of the DG. You must not be independent of the DG. That's administration, and it has to be like that. But on the other side, when we talk of independence of the ombudsman, it's totally independent. But this one is okay. Okay.
Can I just make a request? Can you sit closer to me?
Yeah.
So that it's not disruptive, because every time he has to...
Okay. It's an invitation, Monobis. and it's a leap year this year. Are you aware that it's a leap year this year? So come closer. He must not be independent. He must not be. He must be dependent on the DG. Okay.
Chairperson, I understand. The deliberation, I understand everything what has been said. I'm a nurse by profession. There are norms and standards of the South African Nursing Council. Now, I understand like what Dr. Khanara was saying, to be saying that the South African Nursing Council must have its norms and standards. But now, if there is nothing, the office may come in. But now, what I want to know, according to those norms and standards, because we are having negligence, we are having people not doing whatever they are supposed to do, while those things are there. In this, the office will even use, will know when you go to my home clinic, whereby I'm the sister in charge, and I haven't done 1, 2, 3, as required by my training, my the profession I am, that it should do 1, 2, 3. That's what, because we are having all this medical legal risk, irrespective of what we have learned and what we have like subscribed to as members of the Nursing Council. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Okay, honourable too.
Chairperson, I think Mem Rose stole part of what I wanted to say, but I still want to say that we're having these norms with whoever. Now, there's the word may and must. My simple Bantu education understanding of may and must is that when you tell me that I may, at the end of the day, I may not. And may is like pleading with me. But because we are trying to fix a broken vehicle, not for today, for future purposes, this may doesn't give me, you know, strength that people will comply even in future. Because right now there's a may somewhere, as my you know, colleague is saying, the may is there, but nobody's taking it serious. Now, for us to put our foot down and say must, it will even tell people that we are now serious. You either do it or you don't, so that we must, you know, make people to be accountable on whatever mistakes or defying what they are supposed to do deliberately so. Because if I'm like, you tell me, you may go there, I'll say, they may, I may not. And I don't owe anybody an explanation because it's too lenient. And I can understand the way they are explaining it. To me, it's this first phase. But because we are dealing with a bill here that is going to be there for another year, are we saying this may holds water, you know, to can make people accountable? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. I see other hands, but what I want us to move away from probably is to understand that we're making a law which is going to be there for years. And trying to fix a moving bus, you might actually say, let it be fixed, it must be fixed, only to find that you've got to change in the process. So, and not knowing what is going to happen in the future, I don't want us to deal with this in an emotional way. And not only in an emotional way, but in a way such that you use a particular single experience. Because there's going to be a broad of experiences that are going to come with this. I don't want us to do, but I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but somebody is going to explain. Let me give Ume Kenya and then Dr. Lekhet.
Thank you, Chairperson. Because I just got a gadget. That's why I always lift my hand up, not being seen. Thank you. Thank you.
No, Ma Kenya, I think one thing that is very important, not that we're looking down upon other people, but all the members of parliament are supposed to be having this. Because it's going to be recorded, and this is your duty. So we might have to ask somebody to move from somewhere and then you can have. You just, so don't talk until we get somebody who could move for you so that you have a space. Oh, Len, thank you very much. We're going to pay you for being so humble, Len. How much money do you need, Len? How much money do you need to pay you?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I share the same sentiment. When you look at ABC, even B, I don't think you can say, if you are talking about norms and standards, how can we say nay if we say publish any information? Am I out of order?
No, you are protected.
Thank you. Okay. If we say publish, may publish any information relating to prescribed norms and standards to the media and where appropriate to specific communities. We said here even yesterday that we are concerned about the Patupili principles. We are concerned about the information to the communities. Now, if you say may, it has to go to send a publisher. You cannot publish. You cannot publish any information. So how are the communities going to know if there is a may? So I was to say also, I said the same sentiment, because when looking at ABC, also as Honorable Sekhaya Dry has just said, that's why I have been having my hand up, because I saw it necessary that, yes, I understand what Honorable Mambo has been saying, looking at the age, when the age is saying advise the minister on any matter. Maybe the may comes from there, that this is an advice to the minister. Maybe the minister can be convinced or not be convinced. But the fact of the matter is, if we say there is a may in these three ABC, really, and at the same time we are concerned about the norms and standards, as Honourable Member has just said. So are we now not doing the loophole, as we say? Because now, if it may be published, it may not be published. What are we saying to those people for which we say we want them to have information? Thank you, Chairperson.
Chair.
Thank you.
Okay, you are going to come another time.
I'm also persuaded, may, you may not. Therefore, this is a very important office. Very, very important office. So we must put some instructions to say must. Unless they tell me that this is, all these things are impossible, then you can say may. Thanks.
Thank you. I initially agreed, and I would have agreed if there were no norms and standards. But my understanding now from listening to the input is there are norms and standards. Mm-hmm. They have been published. Everybody knows these things. And our purpose for putting this here is simply so that this office can, if they want to, help further. But if we put an onus on them to have to help further, we're never going to actually get the results we want from this bill. So I'm convinced from what I've heard that I was wrong in thinking that a must be there. It has to be a may if we want to get the results that we want to get from this piece of legislation. So I'm very strongly for keeping a may there in this instance, because it's already done. It's already out there. And if we make this office have to do it again, then we're not going to be able to hold anyone accountable, because it's going to be a loophole in the other way. So just in this instance, we've got to have a may if we want the legislation to be strong.
I want to come back again and say, let's put emotions aside and our past experiences, which might be individualistic. We just look into the future. What do we want to achieve? But I think it's not saying, oh, okay, you're the last one on this point, and then we'll ask the department and the legal people to come to us.
Chair, I just want to support you on this. I think may is the correct word there, because it also means if it is necessary, if the circumstances dictate that you need something, it can be done, whereas the must says that you have to do it, whether it's necessary or not. So I think it gives you the loophole, not a loophole, it gives you the judgment to decide whether it is needed. And, you know, from a point of view of English and linguistics, May to me is the correct one. So I think there are other issues that are more important that we might have to spend time on. Thank you.
You know, I've seen placards in the theaters written, "We demand 1, 2, and 3. But when you sit down and you actually look at the budget that those people have been given, you wonder whether those people have considered that you've got to go these steps before. But they just go and say, "We demand 1, 2, and 3. And in fact, even my kids sometimes, they say, "We demand that at this." And they don't know whether I do have the money or I don't have the money. But that's why I'm saying that let's put the emotions and the experiences. Let's just look at what do we want to achieve. Okay, divide me off.
Can I just request to my colleagues, the members, they mustn't be thinking that we are wasting time. With due respect. It shouldn't be like when we don't understand the way you understand, we are wasting time.
Thanks, Mr. Fall. I think let all of us, we understand that there's nothing stupid that is going to come from here. There's nobody who's illiterate. All of us, we want to make sure that when we pass this law, it's something that is going to be understood by the people. So everybody must feel free. And even if it takes us 3 weeks or 2 years to complete this, let it be. But we must move out of here agreeing that this is the right law. Because when we're dead, nobody is going to come back to us and ask us, "Why did you do this?" And I don't want to be woken up from my grave. I want to rest when I rest, and that will be it. So everybody can... I'll be resting. So all of us, especially members, you must feel free to say whatever. Don't think that is stupid. There's nothing stupid, and there's nobody who's clever than the other. We're all the same. Let's ask questions, and let's say our things. That's why I keep on asking that. Let's not be emotional about it, and let's not rush. We are going to get there. Okay, Department, I'm not sure whether you've got some responses to this, whether there's may or must. You can even talk it in your mother tongue. It's no problem. You can explain it in your mother tongue.
My members... After I've explained what I've said, that as even Ms. Douglas put it, for instance, because the norms and standards have to be prescribed, and norms and standards will be there, and it will be determining factor that they should comply with norms and standards at all costs. This was just given, you know, the office, you know, as some form of assistance. If we on the ground it establishes maybe they are struggling maybe to comply with norms and standards, then it will then come with those guidelines and everything. But I also understand members say, okay, we're creating this, we want this to work and all of that. We don't want the office not to do anything. So the office must, after the norms and standard has been prescribed, then it means after the norms, the regulation, they were put into regulation, those norms and standards and everything. And we still need the office to issue the guidelines in order to assist with the implementation of those norms and standards, so that maybe it's logical and also reasonable to the committee members of suggesting. Maybe they will say, okay, we don't want to, at the same time we hear you, but we don't want to those health establishments to say, look, we're struggling to understand these or to implement these norms and standards. And because we're struggling, maybe that, so that they can claim to say, we are not complying with norms and standards because we're struggling to implement it, or we've got facing this headache, this problem or anything. So that is why maybe the members want that to be marked. I don't see the problem with that. If members feel that the office must have the obligation to issue those guidelines, then it's for members to decide. As we have said in the beginning, that it's a policy issue. Then if members want the mask to be there, then it's there. And then the office will be forced, obviously the office will be forced to issue those norms and standards within a certain period of time. If they don't then issue those norms and standards, then it will be the office that is breaking the law, because it's a mandate or it's obligatory to the office to issue those norms and standards. So if members then want that mask to be there, then it's fine. But now it will mean that I don't know which one of these things, and then all these things that fall under May, then members want all of them to also to be masked. Then it will mean that all of that will collapse into subsection 1, because subsection 1 now start with mastery at the top. Then all those, then it will mean that now the A there becomes I, B, J, and all of that as we all go down, because it will follow that, because it will be now all masked. Then it won't be necessary for the subsection 2. But it is still the decision of members.
Now,
but
The question before you come, Kelly. I saw your hand. Okay.
Thanks. Would it not mean then that if we say must on all of these, then this office could be then having to do a lot of things for a lot of institutions that are not a problem, taking it off of help of being available to deal with the problem? Is the must not going to tie them up in areas that we don't want them tied up in, and we want them free to be able to focus where the actual problems lie? That's the impression I get.
I think the question that is coming from Honorable Tati, not knowing English, it says, are we economical when we say must instead of may? Are we economical? I'm using the term that we've actually discussed. The hands are coming up. Okay.
Chairperson, when I was talking lately, a while ago, I said that I understand that each of the institutions, they do have their nonsense bagger. The only thing maybe which I want to see in the bill is when it says that where there is no nonsense standard, or if the nonsense standard doesn't tally, I don't know how to put it, but what I want to say is I'm sitting here and I know that people have nonsense standard from their governing bodies, but they don't do them. Then I want to see whereby it's been tied, it's been said to be saying that the people must do what they are expected to do. I don't know if you get. I understand the may, I do understand, but my problem is we are here. Whereby the people must do 1, 2, 3, and they are not doing it. And that is why we are coming up with the office which will look for a good quality. But I don't have, like you normally said, this English is not ours, and we understand we shouldn't be tying the coming up with the legislative framework which will at the end of the day be compulsory. If it is not economical, it means that there is something wrong. But what I want to say in front of the department is there are norms and standards from other like nursing. There is norms and standards, but the people are not doing it. How can it be said? Because I'm expecting this office, irrespective that it is not their nonsense standard, they are the South African nonsense standard. This office must know that when it goes to this clinic, this was not that.
Thanks, Ms. Khat. You know, sometimes, Ms. Khat, the past is there to teach us some lessons. But I don't think the past should make us punish the past, because we don't know exactly what happened unless we analyze what happened at that time. But the past is important, and this is what I kept on trying to say. Let's not use the past, because we don't know why the norms and standards that were there have not been followed. But I'm not directing it in any direction, but at the same time, let's just look at from now onwards, learning from the past and trying to, but not to punish, but okay, in that kind of, it was going to be in that kind of, in that kind of, and...
I'm just asking, Chairperson, that we ask the honorable members to read that there is 79.1, which deals with what must happen, and the 79.2 deals with what may happen. My understanding is that if you read 79.1A, it says the office must advise the minister on matters relating to the determination of norms and standards to be prescribed for the national health system and the review of such norms and standards. So basically, it's a process which must take place of ensuring that those norms and standards are there. But when you read 79.2 about things which may happen, is that you find there that it is not only the health establishments, it also deals with other authorities which are not necessarily health establishments, which are not hospitals and clinics, where they are saying that in this instance, you might find an area where there is already norms and standards. So they don't have, because those norms and standards would have already been published. What would be the purpose of this particular structure, again publishing norms and standards, which has already been published? Let me take what the Honorable Khalid says, Diswai says, that nurses have got norms and standards. If the Nursing Council has already published those particular norms and standards, why would this committee, this office, have to publish the same norms and standards after talking to the Nursing Council? So that's the reason why there is a must, or the areas which must be done, and there are areas which may be done, that if they find that there are norms and standards, but those norms and standards have not been published, then they might decide to say, these norms and standards have not been published, so we are going to publish them, because they have not been published, but they are there. It does not mean that they will have to establish norms and standards for everybody. But they will have to enforce, like for instance, if they go to hospital, they will have to enforce the norms and standards which are there. They don't have to create norms and standards.
If there's one thing that I'm not going to try and do, is to make a ruling on these things, because we want to come out understanding all of us. Because if I make a ruling, I'll be taking a particular direction, and we're dealing with a bill here. I think that one point that is coming from Umeja Khaledasai is saying, there have been those norms and standards, but they've not been carried out properly. And hence, she thinks that may has not worked. Now we should put must, because they've been there for the nurses, for the example of nurses, it has been there, but they didn't carry it out. But the point that comes in again is the one that says, why have they not been carried out? Is it because of the must or the may, or there were other things that are, which I think this is why we are having this bill of officer standards, because you might find that a doctor, though there are regulations for the doctor, but if I don't have an ECG machine and I've got to diagnose a myocardial infarct, I won't be able to diagnose, because the standards in that hospital are not helping me to do whatever. That's why I'm saying we need to look at why did it not happen. But in any case, at 1 o'clock we'll be out of here, and then we come back.
Thanks, Chair. To me, I'm persuaded once more, after explanation by the legal gurus, that this happens elsewhere. It's a well-researched document. But Dr. Khanar has come up with a duplication here, because this thing appears here and there. You see? So, a may, to me, I withdraw the mass part of it. I go to the may. Thanks.
Thank you. There's a U-turn. There's a U-turn, but you don't cause accidents. I think it's Honorable Dudley and then Honorable Kane.
I'm covered. Chairperson, for the first time, given the Honorable Dudley. For the first time, it's me.
This is from another mother.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. I was going to say something, but after Honorable Kanaga from place that
Pray start.
No. There's no mass of
all. All the members.
Chairperson, after Honorable Kanare explained more that, then I agree to put May in this the offices. Thank you, Chairperson.
I think he's saying it's a must. It's still a May, even if Trace that. It's still a May. Okay, Honorable Kenya.
Oh, thank you, Chairperson. Yes, of course, I'm not convinced, but because of democratic centralism, that says majority prevails, really. But I'm not convinced at all, just like Honorable Jiswai. Well, that's why I even said A, B, and C. Because if we say now the compliance is not an obligation, it's just, it may be an obligation. So it talks another thing to me also. So, but I'm not convinced at all, just to because if you read, yes, I understand what you're saying about this, this A, B, C, D, E. But when you look at A, B, and C, really, you notice that if we say we are saying, going to say May, we still say we are going to follow the same old story of the May. That makes this harmful, which is happening outside there. Because we are here to advocate for the patients. Now, really, if we say we are going to fail, we have to fall on the May, it will depend on the majority rule due to democratic centralism. Thank you, Chairperson.
Democratic centralism. The department was going to be responding so that we can finish before the appointment of the chief executive officer, so that we finish at that level. But I thought that, being a pseudo-legal person, you know, some people, they say, I think the minister reiterated it, which is something that I had heard, that some of the people, they say, those who are not very Christian-like, they say, God, you better come yourself. Don't send Jesus. Jesus is a young boy. So we just want your comment, DJ, at the end of it. We've heard what has been said, but if you could come.
Chair, can I perhaps use an example, and perhaps this might not even be a solution. And I want to refer the members to the Medicines and Related Substances Control Act. It has a provision that requires that the council publishes information on a regular basis for the public. And I must confess that information is never published. And maybe it's because there's nothing that pushes them to do so. And we're discussing with the lawyer that what would be an appropriate wording that would at least ensure that there's that obligation, but it doesn't create confusion to the office for them to publish guidelines even when not necessary. And I asked him whether would it help if we had a word like where appropriate, because that is important, and we were also discussing whether would it help if A and D were read together. Because if you read A independent of D, then it reads differently. But if you read A in relation to D, then it gives a specific meaning. And perhaps the order in which these clauses are arranged is also significant, that we might want A to be followed immediately by D. And I don't know that helps. This is why I say the legal drafters might assist to deal with this particular problem.
Thanks, DJ. Let me... I said we don't want Jesus. We wanted God himself. Now God has spoken. No. Okay, come, Mr. Khan, I just want to hear what you say. A lot of people have made a reverse, a U-turn.
Maybe it's because I don't know English. Because it doesn't say that I'm adamant. I haven't been. But now, I think what the DJ has just said, and please don't call me, said that. Don't correct God. I think it makes sense because my point was, I know that there are nonsense standards from other disciplines. Now, I think she has understood me, and it's not to say that I'm making a turn. I said that I don't have a problem with me, but my concern, where does the issue of people not doing what they are supposed to do being covered here? But now I think it covers. Thanks. Because it talk about other regulations.
Thank you very much. I think DG, you are going to be promoted and be a politician. You know, one of the work of politicians is to influence and try and show why you want it that way. And you have managed to influence us. Okay, but we go to these other points, but with the proviso that the drafters would have to look at what Utiji was saying. Because if you look at the, truly, Utiji should have come after the other one. But we'll see how you put it. Okay, can we take all those on?
Can I suggest that when you read a clause, read the whole clause, so that you don't read sentences, because that might be creating a problem.
Okay, let's go back again. The office may issue guidelines for the benefit of health establishments on implementation of prescribed norms and standards. Be published any information relating to prescribed norms and standards through the media and, where appropriate, to specific communities. C, collect or request any information relating to the prescribed norms and standards from health establishment and users. D, liaise with any other regulatory authority and may, without limiting the generality of the power, require the necessary information from, exchange information with and receive information from any such authority in respect of, one, matters of common interest, or two, a specific complaint or investigation, and E, negotiate cooperative agreements with any regulatory authority in order to, one, coordinate and harmonize the exercise of jurisdiction over health norms and standards, and two, ensure consistent application of the principle of this act. I'll end there. Okay, another
proposal that we agree to it exactly as it is, in light of the fact that we understand that there are norms and standards out there, everyone knows they should comply with them. This is just saying that this office may help with the implementation if they so need. So the way it reads now, even with B exactly where it is, for me, it's become very clear. So my proposal is so that we don't leave ourselves any loopholes with the law when somebody is trying to get out of complying, let's leave it just as it is. And that's it.
Thank you very much. Okay.
You know, Chairperson, I think this time around I'll align myself with Mam Kenya that... I'm still not convinced about the May, but if the committee says we must align ourselves with the May, I'll jump into that bus, even if it doesn't take me anywhere. Thanks.
Okay. She talked about democratic centralism.
I was just going to say I second what Honorable Dudley has moved. There are three things which will be solved by implementation. They cannot be solved by us here. and which will be interpreted by, if it is brought to the court, and the court will clarify us as time goes. But I really second.
Thank you. I think, no, order, members. Order, so that we can finish. Okay, can we go to the last part on that, which is the third point? The minister may prescribe different norms and standards for different types of health establishments. Are we accepting that? Okay. Order. can we agree? Can we stop here? And then when we start at 3:15 at M46, we'll start at appointment of the chief executive officer. But before we finish, Honourable Dada.
To me, this is where the must should come in, because the minister obviously must, if the minister has provided the norms and standards that are relevant to all the different places, then we don't have to worry about the mayor for the other office. Not that we want to tell the minister what they must do, but they must.
There's a point, before we pack our bags, I think there's an important point that is coming. Maybe let me read this again. It says the minister may prescribe different norms and standards for different types of health establishments. Now, Honourable Dudley says this is the area that should say the minister must prescribe different norms and standards for different types of health establishments. I think there's a question that is going to come there as to, do we envisage or do we understand these different types of health establishments?
You know what, the question, sorry, just to get clear, clearly there's legislation elsewhere that makes sure that the department provides those norms and standards. Am I right? Does the minister have to provide norms and standards in other legislation? Is this the only legislation that's going to say whether somebody provides norms and standards? Because that would have to be worded differently, because it would be that the minister must provide norms and standards relevant to the different institutions. So unless it's written somewhere else, that somebody has to give the norms and standards. So I think what the other members are worried about is that somebody isn't being held to give norms and standards. So we're trying to put it in this office, which it doesn't belong in the office, the new office that we put. It's got to be done. Do you know what I'm saying? So even that's not, obviously, the way that's worded, it's not the right thing. Because that, I know what that's meaning, if they want to different offices. But I think what everybody wants to know is there some piece of legislation somewhere making it a must that the department comes up with norms and standards?
Okay, start the ladies first.
Chairperson, the way I understand this doesn't differ with the previously, what we were doing previously. To be saying that the mayor is relevant because he will only prescribe if the need arises. If there is no need, you may not. Thank you.
I'm sorry I raised the hand when she was raising the hand, but I was going to agree with her. Because my other thing is that the emphasis there is really to say different types of health establishments.
Oh.
That the minister may prescribe different norms and standards. So he has got some leeway, or she has got some leeway to be able to, if he feels like there's a need for different norms and standards for different types of health establishment, he will do that.
Mm-hmm.
But if we say must, then we must now also say which different types of establishment, health establishments are there to be able to, the way it's worded, I agree with it. This time I disagree with Honorable Dudley.
No, you're right. It's what it is. Like, it just actually prompted the question, where is it written that norms and standards must be anybody?
Maybe we're going to give you a chance to come again. I'll call him and I'll go back to Tool.
Thank you, Chair. Just to assist honorable members, that first of all, the issue of the office providing guidelines, it will provide guidelines on existing standards and norms. And the issue of whether there is anywhere where minister is actually obliged to issue these standards, yes, it is Section 47 of the National Health Act, Section 47.1. It says that all health establishments must comply with the quality requirements and standards prescribed by the minister after consultation with the National Health Council. So these standards would have been issued under this section by the minister. And then now this other part recognizes that a different health establishment may have different standards. And therefore this gives the minister to say that, for instance, we talked about the issue of laboratories and we said should they be exempted, then in that case this gives the minister the opportunity to say, but for laboratories these are the standards and norms that will apply, for public hospitals these are the norms and standards to apply, but there is a section that makes an obligation for the minister to provide the standards for all health establishments.
I'm trying to avoid nodding when somebody talks something that makes sense to me. I want to be very neutral. But Honorable Dudley, you want to come?
No, I'm covered. That clearly says what it says for a reason, so that's good. But it just occurred to me in reading that's exactly the problem why people are worried about that must and may. It's just because we needed to be reminded of where it is actually compulsory for those norms and standards to be there. Now that we're reminded of that, I think it helps everybody free up their thinking, because now this new office may make that clearer if they wish, but it's going to be clear anyway. Yeah.
Members, thank you very much for this time. Thank you, Department. And how I wish, the way it was so interactive, I wish all of us go as we are, but my worry is that after eating lunch, most of the blood supply goes to the tummy, not to the brain. We might not have a vibrant discussion like this after lunch, so that's why we put it at 3. So you go and have your lunch now, so that by 3 o'clock at least the blood has gone back to the brain. We'll meet at M46. Let's take all our documents. No, let's start at 3:15. 3:15, M46, 3:15, exactly, we'll be there. The house is starting at 2. We go to the house after the president speaking. We go to. Thank you, everybody. Sorry, members. Order, members. Order. Can I mention this? I've just been reminded. Honorable Kenyan, Honorable Dudley, can we just have order? I'm reminded that on Wednesdays, Parliament starts at 2, at 3. I'm not sure whether it's going to start at 3 today. But it's starting at 2 today,
yeah.
Are we sure? But the important thing is that when the president is speaking, as long as we can be in parliament, and then as soon as he finishes, one hopes that he's going to finish at 3, so at 3:15 work must be at M5. If there seems to be a change, we'll try and send you SMSs and tell you if there's a change. But for now, it's 3:15. Thank you.
Go on.
I don't know, but this guy said you must come to Plain Street. But now I'm with
you. No, wait. You can't come to Plain Street. Where in Plain Street?
Yeah, what number?
Because it's near directly with the...
Phone him then and ask where that is.
But then me and you, the phone for another guy. Me, I don't have a phone.
Oh, sorry.
Even if I don't have a van.
Go home.
If I want to see this guy, tomorrow I must wait to this guy.
In Plain Street.
Yeah,
and yet you don't know where it takes you.
Yes, but now
you don't understand. It's not possible. Go to Parliament and ask them to make a call for you. Let's see that number.
Well, Parliament is here.
But what number is it? 074.
Yeah. 6692961667.
No, go to Parliament and ask them to make a call for you. Sorry, mate. After that, I'll be.
Who keeps taking these wires out?
People are under a lot of accusations. Funding submission.
There you go. Okay. Computer is fully operational. Internet, everything.
Is it really? Because he likes to come and sit here. Is that plug working? Because shame, he comes and sits here when it's not working.
It was working yesterday, now he told me it's not working today, so...
Well, fix it, Jointy!
I don't understand. So he said he's coming back, we'll hear when he comes back. Yeah,
my audience
falls, by the way. I don't know if it's not
my fault. Johnny was talking to
you. I'm completely fresh, you know, everything. You don't even have to be in a hurry.
No, for 3 hours. No, it's fine. I just wanted to check me. I think I'm sorted.
No, I meant I stole it for myself.
Whatever.
Your face is good. Let's hear it.
How do I decide it? Guys.
You're not good.
Hey.
someone's plan. You can't do that. Can't say that apart.
So I'm at work to do it. Thank
you.
When I have this opportunity, I'll be in it. But people, you can't be out in it.
Not here.
Why is it just copy every time I
buy it? No, they get it up.
Because maybe the guy said you got yours, it was there. I was not there this morning. I was there.
You were here?
Yes.
Who?
This is me. This is more like me. And then? Put your little bit of room, I say, keep him.
Come on. So when I was here.
No, but I'm asking.
And the room will come up.
Hey, George. No, sir.
Mas
eu pongo, George.
Agora
ele copiou. Como? E ele? Cadê o tipo?
Thank you.
No, okay. Yanyanga when?
Thank you.
Thank you.